Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The shooting rampage was at a Planned Parenthood clinic. Police say Robert Deere Jr. rambled about baby parts when the shooting finally stopped. And instantly, his murderous day tapped into some of the most high voltage of American politics. Was it deranged and mysterious? Was it provoked, inflamed by superheated rhetoric on the stump? Can we talk about it? This hour, On Point, women's health, hot politics, the abortion backdrop, and the rampage in Colorado. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Was it right? Is it right to make a link here to ultra-angry politics? Is it wrong? Is it time to hash it out, to cool it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Washington is Sandhya Somashekar. She's national reporter for The Washington Post. She covers social issues, has reported extensively on abortion, politics. You can find a link to some of her reporting at our website, onpointradio.org. Sandhya, thank you very much for joining us today.
Great to be here.
This issue of whether there's a climate that produced this blew up almost immediately. Can you set the table for us here? What has been the situation of Planned Parenthood's been facing in the months and weeks before this attack in Colorado that leads some in Planned Parenthood now to say, whoa, we need to cool it?
Okay, sure. Yeah. I mean, well, let me start by saying that Planned Parenthood is no stranger to controversy. They've been a target of anti-abortion activism for a long time, but it really hit a peak this summer, about in July, when a little-known group called the Center for Medical Progress released the results of a 30-month undercover so-called investigation into Planned Parenthood and their fetal tissue donation program that they participated in which they, a few of the affiliates, if they, had material left over from abortions, they would give it to researchers to use for research purposes.
You say give it, but on tape they're talking about the fees they're going to charge for, they say for covering their cost of delivery, $30 or $100 or whatever it might be.
Correct. I mean, that's sort of the crux of it. The activists who film these videos say it shows that Planned Parenthood is actually selling this material for a profit, which would be illegal under federal law. Planned Parenthood counters that they're just recouping their costs for storage and delivery and that's actually permitted under the law.
1993 law permitted under that law. Selling is not. Profiting is not. They say they're not doing that, but they have changed their policy, right, or what they're since the summer.
Yeah, sort of in the wake of all of this controversy, they went ahead and just ended their fetal tissue donation program to sort of take the wind out of the sails of their opponents. It wasn't sort of central to their mission anyway.
All of this got people's attention in a very big way. A bunch of congressional hearings going on already. Lots of references to this over the summer on the presidential campaign stump. And what about apparent pushback?
Pushback in terms of the anti-abortion side or the abortion rights side?
Well, both sides. I mean, first of all, you've got lots of people criticizing them very, very heavily for this, and then you've got cases of arson around the country.
That's true. I mean, in addition to the political backlash against Planned Parenthood, which is, as you mentioned, the hearings, they're trying to cut off Medicaid funds in the states. The presidential candidates have spoken in very passionate terms opposing Planned Parenthood. But there's also been another side, which is threats of violence and hate speech have gone up against Planned Parenthood and other abortion clinics. And in fact, there were 4 arson attacks at Planned Parenthood clinics after the video started airing. There was a hatchet attack at a clinic in New Hampshire. And in Kansas, somebody was arrested for bringing a bomb into one of the clinics there.
Now, at the same time, the language on this stump has by any measure been kind of out there for a presidential campaign. Of course, this is a very emotive issue, and you know, people get really fired up and upset about what was described again and again by many as a trade in body parts, including candidates for the presidency of the United States. Memorably here was Carly Fiorina. This was in September on Fox News with Sean Hannity.
It's all part of their act to try and convince people that this debate we're having about butchering babies is actually about birth control or women's health. It's, of course, no such thing. It's about butchering babies for body parts.
This is language that is not exactly familiar in a presidential campaign. Over the weekend, a lot of people pointed at that and other examples of hot language on this front and said, well, why do you think this shooting took place? Carly Fiorina pushing back here on Fox News Sunday.
Anyone who tries to link this terrible tragedy to anyone who opposes abortion or opposes the sale of body parts is this is typical left-wing tactics.
Typical left-wing tactics, she said, but people in the midst of it pushing back anyway. Sunday, ABC's This Week, we had the executive director of Planned Parenthood Rocky Mountains in Denver, Vicky Cowart, saying she believes that the widespread aggressive rhetoric leveled at her organization was a red flag for those inclined to violence.
I can't believe that this isn't contributing to some folks mentally unwell or not thinking that it's okay to target Planned Parenthood or to target abortion providers.
And here was Colorado's governor, John Hickenlooper, Democrat, on CNN's State of the Union on Sunday, was asked if the Planned Parenthood shooting that left three people dead and nine wounded was an act of terrorism.
It is a form of terrorism, and maybe in some way it's a function of the inflammatory rhetoric that we see on all, I mean, so many issues now. There are bloggers and talk shows where they really focus on trying to get people to that point of boiling over, just intense anger.
Sanjay Somashekar covers this realm for The Washington Post. What has the range of response been, Sanjay?
Well, I mean, I think both sides would agree on the abortion debate that the language around abortion has really taken on a new tenor, a more emotional tenor that people on the pro-life side would say is appropriate for the violence of the act of killing a fetus or a baby in utero, and on the other side they would say that it's really just using terms like butchering, and you've heard people call abortion murder, blood on their hands. That using language like that really is an incitement to violence.
We had this report that he said something to police about baby parts. As when he was taken into custody. That's still kind of vague, but the location itself of the shooting seems like a kind of a big flashing sign.
Yeah, I think the fact that he targeted or it appears to have targeted a Planned Parenthood was a huge red flag just because it is one of the most controversial organizations in the country right now that's been embroiled in a very high-profile controversy.
What about the range of reactions here, Democrat, Republican, what people have said in the aftermath?
Democrats have been very quick to, stand up in support of Planned Parenthood and to condemn the attacks. Actually, interestingly, anti-abortion groups have also been very quick to condemn the actions of the shooter and also try to distance themselves from him and say they don't know him. They don't support his tactics. It's not what they're about. The Republican presidential field was a little bit slower in responding, I think partly responding to the fact that we just have so little information about what drove this man. There was no manifesto. He wasn't known to either the pro-life or the pro-choice community as a known actor on this issue. And so I think they were a little careful, and they're also trying to walk a fine line, both condemning the attack and expressing sympathy for the victims while also not letting up on the pressure that they've tried to put on Planned Parenthood.
Here was Ted Cruz. This was on Sunday at a campaign event in Iowa, condemning the shooting and defending the pro-life movement.
You know, the media promptly wants to blame him on the pro-life movement when, at this point, there's very little evidence to indicate.
What was reported? He said no more baby as he was
out. Well, it's also reported that he was registered as an independent and as a woman and a transgender leftist activist, if that's what he is. I don't think it's fair to blame on the rhetoric of the left. This is a murderer.
It's a murderer. You hear the reporter say, well, what about it? It's reportedly said no more baby parts. And what is Ted Cruz talking about, this independent woman, transgendered leftist activist? What is that a reference to?
Well, that's an apparent reference to the fact that Deere appears to have registered to vote in Colorado as an independent and as a female. No one knows whether that was a clerical error or some sort of a political statement or what it was.
Kind of an anti-government guy. Maybe it was just a kind of a, hey,
right.
Nuts to you. I don't know.
Right, but I think the point that Cruz was making there was that we just know so little about this guy that it could be anything that motivated him.
And so here we are. He's now in custody, murder charges. The police will look at this. Are the police really going to go to motive? Do they really care? Does that matter to law enforcement?
Well, I think it will matter if hate crime charges come into play.
And do we know when or how those might be delivered, if they're going to come in?
You know, this whole thing has gone very methodically and slowly. As you know, we didn't even know the names of the victims until Sunday, all the victims until Sunday. They're being very, very careful and methodical about how they're going about this investigation and the prosecution.
And, of course, now everybody wonders, where does this go? What have we learned? And people making of it what they will already. He's in custody, and it is a hot political issue in this country. We heard the story of one of those killed, an Iraq war vet who was shot outside, went back in to warn others with inside Planned Parenthood that the attack was coming, shot again and ultimately among the dead. I mean, really heart-wrenching stories here, Sandhya.
The whole thing is just really, really awful, and the conversation about this will be going on for a while.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about women's health, the abortion debate, hot rhetoric, and the deadly rampage at the Planned Parenthood Clinic in Colorado. You can join us this hour. What do you see going on here? Are you prepared to tie this shooting to months of blistering political rhetoric aimed at Planned Parenthood? Is that a bridge too far? Is it just calling it like it is? Are conservatives too quick to say no connection, one crazy shooter? Are liberals too quick to plant blame? Sandhya Somashekhar with The Washington Post has joined us. Here were some of the police radio communications during that standoff on Friday as Robert Louis Deere shot his way through the Planned Parenthood clinic.
I just got shot at. He's behind Planned Parenthood. The shooter is constantly shooting, keeping those officers down. Basically, I see him. He's behind his vehicle.
Here's an account from an eyewitness in the parking lot as the shooting unfolded.
We were told to go back to our cars, and that's when a bullet cracked over my head and hit the stop sign on my left side. And I just kind of flipped the switch and tried to do crowd control and get people back to their cars as fast as they could.
People trying to survive. At a campaign stop in Iowa on Sunday, here's Republican Senator Ted Cruz criticizing liberals and implicitly the media for connecting the shooter's actions to those who speak out against abortion.
I think there has been some vicious rhetoric on the left blaming those who are pro-life. I'll tell you, I am proud to be unambiguously pro-life.
But people are looking at the heat of the rhetoric, and some are worried about it. Here at a vigil for victims of the Planned Parenthood shooting in Colorado Springs on Sunday, Reverend Amanda Henderson saying she sees a broader climate of intolerance and divisive speech across the country.
I am disheartened by the rhetoric of violence and division that we keep hearing again and again. We're hearing it in our media, in our social media, and from our politicians. And it's not okay.
You can join us, 800-423-8255. What do you see? Sandhya Somashekhar, please stand by in Washington. With us right now from New York is Emily Bazelon, staff writer for the New York Times Magazine, senior research fellow at Yale Law School, host of Slate's Political Gab Fest. Her column on the shooting is headlined Planned Parenthood in the Tinderbox of Abortion Rhetoric. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Emily Bazelon, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Washington, Mona Charon, columnist with Creator Syndicate, contributor to the National Review, the Washington Examiner, senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Mona Charon, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Emily, what do you make of the charge that we've had a season of rhetoric that set the table for the killings in Colorado?
Well, I think when you look at the history of opposing abortion, you know, you see it punctuated by violence. And this is obviously not the result that almost everyone who opposes abortion wants to see. For one thing, it's bad politically for abortion opponents when their movement gets linked to extremists. But there
and
is
And murder.
This...
They're supposed to be about life.
Right. But there is also a certain twisted logic to killing an abortion provider. If you really think that abortion is murder and that, you know, hundreds of babies are being killed inside an abortion clinic, then you could argue that that is justifiable homicide. And there are a few abortion opponents who have made that argument. Again, it's not the mainstream position. I think the question is, when you have a lot of the movement getting behind words like butchering and atrocities for describing what was a matter of donating fetal tissue for scientific research, then you have a kind of mixing here of extremist language. And then there's this question of whether that breeds a climate in which someone like Mr. Deere or in the past, people who've killed abortion providers include a guy named Scott Roeder in Kansas. He talked about how, you know, all these babies were dying and no one was doing anything about it. And that's the kind of edge here. It's not the edge, again, that most abortion opponents ever want to see, but it is all part of the same spectrum.
Mona Charon, can Carly Fiorina talk about butchering babies and then not have any sense of culpability when butchery happens in the real world?
If we are going to have a standard that says we have to be careful and police our language because there are nuts and marginal people out there who might be inspired to commit terrible crimes because of our language, let's be balanced about it, all right? There was a fellow named Floyd Corkins who broke into the offices of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. He had with him about a dozen sandwiches from Chick-fil-A that he planned to stuff in the mouths of the corpses he was hoping to create. He shot and grievously wounded the security guard, but thanks to the courage of that security guard, he was apprehended and wasn't able to carry out this mass murder that he had planned.
This was like a Chick-fil-A revenge killing he had in mind? Is that the was the idea?
He was very clear. He said it was about the Family Research Council's advocacy for marriage being between a man and a woman. He had read on the Southern Poverty Law Center's website that this made them a hate group. And after he finished murdering them, he was planning to move on to the Traditional Values Coalition offices. This was all not contested. He's serving a very long sentence now. We also had the case of the Oregon shooter who singled out Christians. We had the case of the Roanoke shooter in Virginia, a black gay male who clearly, I think, was schizophrenic, but in any event had a lot of delusions about being the victim of racial hatred. Did his particular manic actions and thoughts discredit civil rights advocacy? Obviously not. Did Corkin's horrible atrocity, planned atrocity, invalidate those who argue for same-sex marriage or make them all complicit in his actions? Obviously not. Let's have some balance and some understanding that you cannot seize upon the actions of somebody who is sort of loosely or even, you know, in this case, we don't even know if this loner guy who lived in a house without even electricity, this Deere person, we don't know much about him at all. They said he rambled. He seems to have had mental illness. He was guilty of cruelty to animals. We don't know, but there's such an obscene eagerness to take him and wrap him around the shoulders of the pro-life movement, which is, as it claims, is pro-life, condemns violence in all forms, including violence against the unborn. And this eagerness to smear them with this crime is very destructive to our civil conversation.
Emily, it's a smear. And if you want to get into this, then fair is fair. You've got to talk about people who may have come from what looks like another political vantage, if it was political and not, mental illness in those cases. What about it?
Well, I don't think I've ever heard people arguing in favor of gay marriage calling the other side butchers and murderers. I don't think the rhetoric of the left is inflamed in that same way, certainly not the mainstream rhetoric of the left. And again, I would think the history here is relevant. When you're using violent language about abortion, you are doing it against a backdrop in which people have picked up guns on other occasions and killed abortion providers. You know, I think it's also important to pull back here and make the obvious point. People have a right to say whatever they want to say. We have a very broad understanding in the United States of freedom of speech. Mm. All of this speech is protected, and it's not a question of whether anyone is going to be policed or punished in any way for talking. It's a question about whether when you say something very inflammatory and accuse abortion providers of being of these kinds of in extreme crimes, whether you then may be inadvertently instigating. And I think if people on the left were using super inflammatory language in service of their cause, then yes, they should ask themselves the same question about whether this is wise and prudent, not whether it's allowed, but whether it's a good idea.
Mona, I'll bring that to you. But Sandhya Somashekhar, what about in a political season, the possibility of these things getting ratcheted up, not down or not cool? I mean, Carly Fiorina, in one of the debates, described one of these videos as, she said, was video of a formed fetus on the table, its heart beating, its legs kicking, while someone says we have to keep it alive to harvest its brain. Now, there is apparently no such scene in the videos. Are we seeing a magnification, an exaggeration for political effect here, Sandhya?
That's right. There was no such scene that she's describing. She's sort of there was a video that included some stock footage of fetuses, including one stillborn fetus, and an employee of a tissue procurement company describing something along the lines of what Fiorina said was in the video. I think that this is a question the whole country is asking about our politics in general. I think not just on abortion, but on a variety of issues, whether, you know, the language that people are using is, we've heard it with the Islamophobia debate, whether people are really thinking through the language they're using or whether they're pandering to people's basest instincts. And it's something I think that we'll be hearing throughout the election season, regardless of the subject, whether it's abortion or something else.
Mona, Tom, Emily says there's not parody here, that there's more aggressive, violent language being used on the right. Certainly there's been very, very vivid language. And we just heard, I just quoted some from Carly Fiorina. What about it?
Let's talk about that Carly Fiorina episode, because it's important to get this exactly right. And I have to say that I think Fiorina did not get it exactly right. But here's what actually is represented on the video. There is a former employee of a tissue procurement company who did work closely with Planned Parenthood and who described on camera what she saw. And she did see a fully formed fetus at that age being kept alive so that its brain could be harvested. That part was absolutely true. What was not true was that that particular child was shown on the video. They showed stock footage, as Sonia said, of a similarly aged child. Okay. So the fact is, the facts there are horrifying, all right? They are really upsetting. But you cannot, in this instance, when we're saying the rhetoric has been so hot, in this case, it isn't so much the rhetoric as the facts. The facts are pretty horrifying about what really happens in an abortion. And that was what the Center for Medical Progress was simply trying to do, was to show in their films exactly what goes on in abortion clinics and to show it in the words of the people themselves who do the work. And they were incredibly callous. They were very casual, discussing cutting up babies and selling their parts. And yes, it was selling. And Planned Parenthood, by the way, has since said it will no longer, they didn't say they no longer donate fetal tissue. They said they will no longer accept payment for it. So there's an acknowledgement there, perhaps, that they recognize that what they did was quite unsavory and possibly even illegal.
It was a 1993 law that Republican leaders signed off on, fetal tissue for research. People may find it abhorrent, but this was a law that Republicans were part of passing.
You could not sell it for profit.
Well, they were charging $30 or $100. That doesn't sound like selling for much of a profit. That sounds like the cost of distribution.
But in any event, Planned Parenthood has backed away from it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I think there's a distinction between hateful rhetoric and overheated rhetoric, which I agree with my fellow panelists is something that we should all police, and harsh truths. And what happens in abortion clinics is very ugly, it's very upsetting, but it's the truth. And it's a truth that we try very hard to get away from. We use a lot of euphemisms like women's health and so forth, but the actual killing that goes on in an abortion clinic is very upsetting. And by the way, the situations in which a mother's life is in danger are minuscule compared to the number of abortions that are performed.
Of course, I mean, women's health is an issue here, right in the middle of all this. We're talking about political speech, about very hot speech, about the killings in Colorado, whether there's a connection there. Mona, Sandhya, Emily, please stand by. Karen is calling from Chatham, Illinois. Karen, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. I am a former Planned Parenthood volunteer. I volunteered at the downtown Chicago Planned Parenthood Clinic for several years.
Okay.
And I was subject, every day just to get into the building, you had to fight through throngs of people screaming at you and calling you all sorts of names. And once I was actually attacked, and luckily we had security guards out there that could break that up. Now, that didn't stop me. My job there was I was a patient advocate, which meant I held the hand of the lady or the girl, because
yep.
some of these girls were very young
mm-hmm.
who were going through the procedure. I explained what was happening. This is not an easy thing for anyone. It's not an easy decision. But to see this as anything but a hate crime or a crime committed by someone at least associated with pro-life, I think is ludicrous.
Why, Karen? I mean, the Wall Street Journal editorial here says maybe it's paranoid delusion, just mental illness.
Why didn't he go into a barbershop then or the mall or a gas station? I just don't buy it. Another thing I wanted to say is these people who are pro-life also are pro-death penalty, and that's always bothered me. And the last thing I want to say is if Planned Parenthood is defunded, abortion rates are only going to go way up because the women who rely on Planned Parenthood for their birth control, if they don't have access to that, then the abortion rates are going to go high.
Karen, you speak from firsthand experience, and I appreciate your call. I mean, Emily, you know, it is true just on the face of it. Some of these insistent denials of any connection, I mean, you look and say, it wasn't a barbershop. It wasn't a bake sale. It wasn't a bike shop. It was Planned Parenthood. It looks pretty not accidental.
Yeah. I've been reporting on reproductive rights for a long time, and I have really noticed an increase in the targeting of Planned Parenthood in the last 4 or 5 years. And it's not an accident. Planned Parenthood gets $450 million a year in federal funds, not for abortions. That's illegal. Congress made that illegal back in 1977. What Planned Parenthood does with that money is provide health care services for low-income women, like testing for STDs and birth control. And your caller is right. Those services are important for women's health, and they also help prevent abortions.
On Point is sponsored by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses, made in America. They're engineered for comfort and long-lasting support with just the right sink, just the right bounce. Two technologies, latex foam and memory foam, come together for better nights and brighter days. It's outrageous comfort at a polite price. Here's the great part. You can try one risk-free for 100 days with free delivery and returns. Go to casper.com/onpoint. That's casper.com/onpoint. And remember to use promo code ONPOINT at checkout to receive a special offer. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about women's health, the abortion debate, hot rhetoric, and the deadly rampage at the Planned Parenthood Clinic last Friday in Colorado. You can join us this hour. Are you prepared to tie this shooting to months of blistering political rhetoric aimed at Planned Parenthood? Is that a bridge too far? Is that just telling it like it is? Are conservatives too quick to say no connection? One crazy shooter maybe here? Are liberals too quick to plant blame? With columnist Mona Charon, Emily Bazelon of the New York Times Magazine, Sanjaya Somashekar, who covers this whole realm for the Washington Post. We're glad to have her with us from Washington today. 800-423-8255, our number. The president talked about this after the shootings in Colorado Springs on Friday, saying the drumbeat of mass shootings in this country is not normal. Enough is enough, he said.
We talked about this after Columbine and Blacksburg, after Tucson, after Newtown, after Aurora, after Charleston. It cannot be this easy for somebody who wants to inflict harm on other people to get his or her hands on a gun.
There's the gun, and then there's the heat, the temperature in the room. Here was Ted Cruz over the summer talking, this is again with Sean Hannity on Fox News, about those secretly recorded Planned Parenthood videos.
This video and the one from last week are both gruesome. That they show senior officials at Planned Parenthood callously, heartlessly bargaining and bartering to sell the body parts of unborn children. They're sipping wine. They're laughing about it. This one official you just showed said she wants to sell so many body parts of unborn children she can buy her own Lamborghini.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it wasn't pretty, but it wasn't serious either. But yeah, there it was. Here's California Senator Barbara Boxer. She's been making the link between pro-life rhetoric and the shootings in Colorado Springs. This was on MSNBC yesterday, saying candidates like Carly Fiorina have been making provocative, inaccurate claims. And she called on Speaker of the House Paul Ryan to stop the congressional hearings about all that on Planned Parenthood.
I think it makes a difference and it creates a terrible atmosphere. And I would call on Paul Ryan, and I did, as soon as this happened, to disband this committee. It's costing millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands anyway. And we don't need another committee. And
right.
We don't need another witch hunt.
Barbara Boxer, no witch hunt, please. Dan in Nashville, Tennessee. Dan, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you see, Dan?
Well, I wanted to make a comment. I think it was very telling that your lead into the segment said, quote, should we quell this type of conversation? And I just think it's odd for a person in your position who espouses the freedom of speech to say something like that.
Yeah, you know, Dan, to be fair, I absolutely did not say that. I can quote you back what I said, but I did not say, should we quell this conversation? I should have said, can we have this conversation I've been saying in this hour? What do you think?
Actually, that's not what you said.
Yeah, it is. I got it right here.
That's why I picked up the phone and called. Why don't you play it? Play it.
I can't play it back for you right now, but what's your point, Dan? Where are you going?
Well, my point is exactly that. I think that left continues this narrative. And I am one of the people who think that this is an isolated nutball, and there are lots of nutballs around. And, you know, did he have it in his mind that he wanted to go out and hurt people in an abortion clinic, which is completely awful? Perhaps he did. Are there legions of these people? No. No, there are not legions of Christians and people who are against abortion, who want to go out and shoot people up.
Yeah, I think that was Emily's first point. It's not the mainstream view. My question for you is, Dan, you know, we got a democracy here. We kind of have to get along. We need to be able to express strong opinions. But do we get to a place where it becomes so ultra angry that we may provoke people in our midst to do something like this?
No, I don't think it. listen, if you're a sane thinking person, you make decisions in life yourself. I could sit and listen to vitriol from someone all day and still know that it's wrong to go out and commit murder.
Tom?
Yes, Mona?
I would like to see, again, as I said earlier, a little bit of balance here. Consider, over the summer and into the fall, we had many demonstrations by the Black Lives Matter group. Some of them became extremely heated and intemperate. Some of them chanted things like, about the police, pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. Then some fellow went out and assassinated two New York cops. Did you have a program where you sort of discussed whether the rhetoric had gone too far in the Black Lives Matter movement and
whether
they
ought to be? We've had a lot of shows on Black Lives Matter.
But on that specific point, did you say their rhetoric caused the violence?
You know, we've talked about the rhetoric, we've talked about the violence, we've talked about the charges that that the police shootings came out of that, but also raise questions about whether that's true, just as questions are being raised right now. I mean, I take your point, Mona, that there's a lots of intemperate language in this country. We're looking at the proximate incident right here, and this one has made its way all the way to the presidential debate stage in language that I do not recall.
Look at the way the Democrats described Republicans in 2012. What did they say? They said not that they disagreed about abortion or about welfare or whatever issue. They said Republicans are engaged in a war on women, a war. Now, do you regard that as temperate, reasonable ways of disagreeing?
People have all kinds of ways of describing things. It's not the same as butchery to my ear, but...
Well, butchery, when it comes to the very delicate subject of killing the unborn, that's not that much of a stretch, honestly, because... And I would commend to anybody who has not watched them to watch the videos that were made by the Center for Medical Progress, because it's... Where I'm someone who used to think you should never show images of unborn children. I thought that was unseemly and more likely to turn people off than to change hearts and minds. I now think, having watched these videos, that they are very persuasive. When you see it, it's different. Those are children. Those are arms, legs, hearts, faces on a light tray.
They're fetuses and
being picked over by somebody with tweezers.
Yeah, we understand, and we understand how emotive all that is, and more than that to many people. But it's also a legal procedure in this country, abortion, that it has been seen as by many, many as tied up with women's rights for a long time. Emily, I want to read you something here and get your reaction. This is from Tim Wise. He's a kind of anti-racism activist, author of Under the Influence. He says, so given the media's reluctance to say definitively what the Colorado shooter's terrorist motive was, I am to conclude the following. When gunmen shoot up a Paris concert hall shouting, Allahu Akbar, nothing else need be known? They are not simply deranged or mentally ill, rather they are motivated by fanatical Islam. But when a white Christian shoots up Planned Parenthood and says when arrested, no more baby parts, after months of right-wing propaganda and lies about Planned Parenthood selling baby parts, we need to proceed carefully in ascribing motive and wait till all the information is in. Is that too tough, Emily? Is that comparison?
Well, I mean, I think that comparison is identifying some clear inconsistencies. I think we also, I got to go back to this video because I think the way Mona described Carly Fiorina's description of it needs some amplification.
Mm-hmm.
Fiorina made a false statement about what that video shows. And the one former abortion clinic employee who described this very upsetting sight, we have no independent verification of whether that took place. Whether second trimester abortions are something most Americans are comfortable with or not, you know, if you really want to ask that question and take it to its limits, you have to ask whether women in the second trimester should be forced to carry their babies to term, whether they want to or not. Many women in the second Best her who choose abortions do so because they learn that the baby has serious defects. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. Mm-hmm. Some of them are coming to abortion clinics later for other reasons. But there is a significant percentage of people who lose wanted pregnancies because they learn of something going terribly wrong with the fetus. And it is sometimes those patients who choose to donate fetal tissue because that tissue is very valuable for scientific research. It's been involved in creating life-saving vaccines and treatments for all kinds of diseases. That is the research that Planned Parenthood was facilitating here. And the fact that the doctor who's describing it is doing it in a way that, you know, people see as graphic and callous, that has been a public relations nightmare for Planned Parenthood, clearly. But when you take a step back and ask what's really going on here, we are talking about donating tissue for scientific research.
Is the war on women rhetoric of the 2012 campaign equivalent to what we've been seeing over these last months? To your mind, Emily, Mona says, let's be fair.
No, I don't think it's equivalent. I think this war on language is so general and familiar to us from a million different contexts that it is very different from talking about killing babies. You know, I also think in a way this whole conversation is a win-win for the anti-abortion movement because it focuses us on the most potentially disturbing aspects of abortion and away from the fact that more than 90% of abortions in the United States take place during the first trimester when fetuses are relatively undeveloped in a way that most Americans are comfortable with. It is clear from polls. And so, you know, I just want to point out here that the more we emphasize the kinds of language, false or not, that Fiorina is losing, the more we're kind of getting into this groove of portraying abortion in a way that does not reflect the vast majority of abortion procedures.
I mean,
we have not
galloped to do it, Emily, but now you've got three people dead in Colorado and nine more who are shot. I mean, if that kind of language, if it has a role in provoking that, it seems worth discussing.
Yes, I would agree. And I think, you know, asking whether other kinds of inflammatory rhetoric by the left, by other groups, is also over the top and potentially, you know, dangerous. Those are fair questions to ask, too. Going back to the quote you were reading me, there are contexts in which we are very comfortable drawing a straight line between violent speech and violent actions, and then other contexts in which we shy away from it. And we have to think about why we make those kinds of distinctions.
Paul in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Paul, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. And I want to take you to task to a certain extent for calling this hot rhetoric or exaggeration. And actually, even though you've gotten better at it, for letting Carly Fiorina off way too easy with regard to this. And I can't even comment on what Mona Sharon has said. You know, what Carly Fiorina said repeatedly was that she saw this video.
Yeah.
And I don't know where you come from, but where I come from, we call that a bald-faced lie. And it's not hot rhetoric. It's not the equivalent of chanting something in the street. It is a bald-faced lie. And it's not to be excused because somebody somewhere on the left said something that was untrue. So hot rhetoric is one thing, that's bad enough, but when people get away with bald-faced lies because somebody's going to, somebody's cousin knew somebody who saw somebody describe something somewhere, that's what's leading to these problems.
Paul, I take your point. I mean, we try to really get into it here, exactly what was seen and exactly what was said. Certainly it was hot. You say it's more than that. Do you see a connection to what we saw in Colorado on Friday?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You and clearly this was a deranged person, but you can't come straight out and lie about things and not expecting it to have some sort of effect. And even if it's only an effect on somebody who might be deranged, the people that he shot are still dead.
Paul, I appreciate your call. Mona, yes?
Yes. May I point out the Unabomber, whose ideology was radical environmentalism and who killed and maimed many people? And may I point out something else? One of the police officer who was killed in this awful murder in Colorado. It was named Garrett Swayze.
Yep.
He ran toward danger.
Murderer's Massachusetts guy. Yep.
Right. And he was in his other life, he was a Christian pastor and a pro-lifer. He was the perfect embodiment of the pro-life spirit. He respected all life, and he was ready to lay down his own to save people who were in danger.
I mean, we're not saying there can't be perfect, but that means there can also be imperfect. And this conversation really is about how we talk about this to encourage one or the other in a way. I got to get another couple calls. Casey in New Haven, Connecticut. Casey, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I would just like to say, the gentleman from Texas earlier brought up that this is a isolated case. I'd like to say that, you know, if you go to a Planned Parenthood on any given day, mostly Saturdays, you will see plenty of people holding crazy signs outside telling men, women, children that are teenagers going yep. into Planned Parenthood that we are murderers and killing babies. Is it so crazy to think that one of those people would go crazy later in life? I mean,
well,
you're already telling people that they are horrible people because they're making what they believe is the best life decision for them.
Yeah, you do get way out into tough territory there. And if somebody's not stable, it's easy to see how they could be influenced. Sandhya, where do you see this going for Planned Parenthood? Is there any chance of this language being toned down a little bit on the other side of these killings in Colorado? Are even the politicians on the podium now likely to say, wait a minute, or not, Sandhya? Is this too hot and appealing politically?
I mean, I think some of this, it remains to be seen as we learn more about Mr. Deere and what was going on in his mind. But it's also going to depend on how individual pro-life activists kind of look at this and whether they feel that they personally need to tone it down.
It's a big political season in front of us, and it's a kind of real-time experiment. I guess they always are, but when things get this hot and ramifications come, it leaves us wonder what the politicians are thinking. Mona Charon at the Creators Syndicate writes for National Review and Washington Examiner. Thank you for joining us today, Mona.
My pleasure.
Sandhya Somashekhar at the Washington Post, covering all of this there, national reporter. Sandhya, thank you very much for your insights today.
Thank you.
And Emily Bazelon at the New York Times Magazine, staff writer there. Always great to have you with us. Thank you so much, Emily.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.